This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. This Wednesday will be the 12th anniversary of the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and of course the plane that went down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. It will also be the first anniversary of the attack on the American diplomatic mission at Benghazi, Libya, in which we lost the U.S. ambassador to Libya, Christopher Stevens, as well as the information officer, Sean Smith, and two former Navy SEALs, Tyrone Woods and Glenn Doherty, who were working there at the time. There's been a lot of political discussion about what was done right and wrong there that night under that attack and who's to blame for what was said during and after. But what I've always been much more interested in is the story of what happened to the people who were there that night. And that's the focus of a new book called Under Fire, The Untold Story of the Attack in Benghazi. It's written by Fred Burton and my next guest, Samuel Katz. Sam, welcome to America Weekend.
Thank you for having me.
In reading through your book, one thing keeps coming through to me, and that is that you and Fred obviously have a connection to the members of the DSS, the Diplomatic Security Service, and the men and women who do that job, right?
Well, Fred Burton was a former State Department special agent who spent much of his career battling terrorism and investigating attacks against diplomats and diplomatic compounds, like the one that was attacked last year in Benghazi. He was one of the special agents who was instrumental in capturing Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind of the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. My connection to the Diplomatic Security Service is I had the good fortune to discover them before most others. And I wrote a book about how agents of the special of the Diplomatic Security Service captured Ramzi Youssef in Pakistan.
Okay, so you both have a personal connection to that, but I feel that there's also an emotional connection to the people who were there as you write about them. So tell me a little bit about what you know from their perspective as those walls were being breached that night last September.
Well, ultimately, foreign policy ends up coming down to the young agent on a post somewhere in an isolated country and an isolated continent under fire, under threat. The their world is one of sacrifice and courage. There were five special agents that were in Benghazi the night of the attack. Three were assigned on temporary duty to the compound, and two were assigned to Ambassador Stevens' protective detail. So the five of them, young agents, most had less than 10 years on the job. They had been assigned to various field offices in the United States, but they found themselves in a city that was void of any law and order, any civilian control, no host government power, and a lawless and very dangerous city that that erupted that night into a lethal attack against the U.S. diplomatic as well as U.S. intelligence presence in the city.
And in fact, you talk about it being a hellhole even before the attack. Other countries had pulled their people out of Benghazi, hadn't they?
Yes. The Benghazi was a pot of boiling acid that was simmering for a long time until the boil came in the attack against the compound. In June 2012, the CIA terminates the number two in al-Qaeda in a drone attack in Waziristan. He had originated in Libya, and al-Qaeda in the Maghreb in North Africa vows vengeance. A few days after that drone strike, the British ambassador is almost killed in an ambush very close to the U.S. Special Mission compound. There are other attacks. The International Red Cross is attacked, and they pull out. The International Red Crescent is attacked, and a group of Iranian volunteers assigned to that pulls out. Other countries leave. There are IEDs placed in front of the Special Mission compound, but it was deemed that the U.S. presence in the city, the outpost of expeditionary diplomacy, was in this nation's higher interest. In the book, we interview a young agent who was young at the time, who is retired, who, when he was in his early 20s, he was assigned on temporary duty to the U.S. Embassy in Beirut, Lebanon, during the Civil War. And the embassy was being shelled, it was being rocketed, and he sent a cable back to Washington and said, "Listen, this place is going to blow. This place is dangerous. We have to pull out now for the safety of our diplomats." And a few days later, the State Department cabled him back and said, "We are in Lebanon for a higher purpose." And a few days after that, the U.S. ambassador and the chief political officer were kidnapped and brutally assassinated by Palestinian terrorists. So one of the messages of the book is that this is not something that is new. This is something that's been going on for many, many years. Embassies, consulates are high-threat, high-profile, high-visibility targets that are very convenient for terrorists to strike because they tend to be in the countries in which they operate.
Why didn't we pay more heed to that warning and do more to set up security there, or would it have been possible in any way to repel this invading horde?
That's a $1 million question, and why do we not have congressional discussion, congressional debates, and people subpoenaed to the Hill to talk about how we can improve diplomatic security before an attack? Because law enforcement is always reactive. It's always after the fact, fingers are pointed, and we see who we can blame and what we can do. But the Diplomatic Security Service is one of the smaller branches of law enforcement in the federal government. It is an office inside the bureaucracy of the State Department. And in fact, the other day, the New York Times revealed a panel that was convened of former State Department and security officials to see how they can kind of raise the bar of the Diplomatic Security Service so they have a seat at the table. It's very important to understand that the security professionals, the Diplomatic Security Service agents who will be assigned to these posts, or even the ones that are in higher office who will dispatch them to the posts, don't have a seat at the table in deciding what happens at embassies and where diplomacy goes. They're just told once the decision has been made that it's time to go, grab your gear, and do your job.
Is this recent, or does this go back to previous administrations as well, a lack of security for our diplomats overseas?
I think you have to go back to the Nixon administration, and even beyond that, into the 50s and 60s in Latin America, embassies have always been attacked. Embassies have always been targets. The red, white, and blue waves proudly on hilltops and on top of very tall and majestic buildings. Everybody knows where the embassy is. It's not a secret. So security and diplomacy never go hand in hand in the same basket. Diplomats want to meet people. They want to talk to people. They want to be out there. And the security professionals know the threat, and they sometimes have to reel them back in, and that causes friction.
Tell me about the people inside that building on the night that the attack began, what their thoughts were and their contact with the outside world, and particularly those of the State Department, and what the reaction was here.
Ambassador Stevens was scheduled to be in Benghazi for most of the week. He worked out of the U.S. Embassy in Tripoli, which is in western Libya. He had public meetings, he had public events, and he had private meetings. On the night of September 11th, approximately around 9:40 in the evening, he had retired to his room in a villa, which was a part of the compound, along with Sean Smith, a Foreign Service officer, and who served as Ambassador Smith's information specialist. There were five agents present, and it was the end of the day, and we refer to it in the book as a few of the agents kicked back and were smoking and joking. A private guard force of local Libyans were guarding the perimeter, but they were unarmed. They were equipped with handcuffs and tasers. And there were a few militiamen from the 17th February militia who were there to augment security under contract with the State Department. From the moment the first shot was fired, when the terrorists entered the compound, the agents there who were positioned in the TOC, or the Tactical Operations Center, realized that this was a terrorist attack. And they followed procedure. They followed procedure professionally. They contacted the U.S. Embassy in Tripoli, and they contacted the CIA station or annex that was a mile and a half down the road. And through channels, report came in that it was an attack. But during an attack, as ferocious as this one was, it is difficult in the relaying of the information to get a real-time sense of what's actually going on. As much as information was relayed through the bureaucracy and through the thousands of emails that go here and there inside a body like the State Department, what's happening on the ground is really only known by those who are trying to survive it.
Yeah, I can imagine what it must be like to not only be in the midst of an attack, but have people asking you what's going on there, and you really are a little bit too busy being attacked to be able to handle questions and file forms and even to talk to people on the phone.
Well, it's even more than that. We point that out in the book. When agents in the past have been in these situations, they have to make their own decision. It doesn't matter if it's the right decision or the wrong decision. But for that particular particular moment in time for that particular second in their lives that will impact the rest of their lives.
Yep.
It's their decision.
Right, because they're on the ground and they're handling the situation, and you can't wait for somebody to do it later. You can't fight back in a conference room somewhere a long way away. It's a compelling book, and it is a great read. It's Under Fire, The Untold Story of the Attack in Benghazi by Fred Burton and Samuel Katz. Sam, thanks for joining me here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.